Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy-Turner.
Good afternoon.
And Josh Brown.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Now, chaps, it seems like games are finally starting to trickle in. The majority will be here by the end of this month. Returnal on the PS5 is coming out. Resident Evil 8 will be with us within the month, I think, at some point in May. But it's definitely coming in May. Big old talking points are coming. So we're going to sort of break down some of the new titles like Oddworld Soulstorm. We've all been playing. Well, me and Ben Roy have dabbled a little bit in Outriders. I know he's played a little bit more than me. The sort of like... Yeah. Flash in the pan turned into worthwhile game, turned into is it just another loot grind style third person shooter thing that we'll get to in a bit of time. But I did want to touch on the fact that doing the rounds in the news is the, you know, Sony aren't doing very well in regards to the general optics of the brand. We've talked about it a whole bunch. There's a bunch of videos on the channel and everything else. But one thing that they are notably not keeping up with Xbox on is backwards compatibility or access to, you know, past libraries of games. And Mr. Ben Roy went out and got a PlayStation 3 for his troubles. So I was, How's that been treating you? How's it feel to go back?
It's weird because I bought this thing the few days before they announced we're taking a shotgun to every PS3 and Vita, and all the devs that had bought new kits for them, and we're just gonna old yellow them.
Take them out back.
The PS3, the PS3. After I sunk my trophies, and that took about 4 hours, it felt like to do. Actually. Is fine. It's still it's quieter than the PS4. So wherever this human that had this before took a lot more care of it than I did my PS4 and has probably cleaned it out. Mm-hmm. It runs well. Like it takes it. There's a thing I've noticed right with analog games of that era. They're all a bit sort of like there's not lag, but they're a bit more stiff. Like all games now seem to feel more like smooth and you can play them and sort of thing. But when I'm sort of turning someone in, say like Spec Ops: The Line. Or Splint and Cell, they all sort of sound fishy. They all sort of move a bit more like you've got to like grease them up into it, sort of thing. If that makes sense.
Is it like a frame rate thing? Because everything just like, is that one of those quality of life things these days that we're just more used to?
Yeah, and if you scare someone in the shadows in Splint and Cell, the frame rate drops for a bit. It's just supposed to like, as they're trying to run for the sort of button on the wall, and then you're trying to contend with the frame rate and trying to get them before. It's all these sort of things that it's weird going back to and playing like PS2 games. I've not dabbled in the PS1 stuff yet, but going back to some of like Return to Castle Wolfenstein and Conflict Desert Storm, they run surprisingly well when it sort of just works. And I'm sort of like, imagine if this just worked on like a PS4 or a PS5, you know, imagine if we had the power of the Xbox Series X on PlayStation ecosystem.
Posit the question to you that that Jim Ryan sort of said when he was at that Gran Turismo event in regards to past generations of consoles. Do you think it is worthwhile going back to older stuff now that you've dabbled a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's certain things like, I guess he's kind of right with like, why would you want to play Gran Turismo 1 again? Like, I can understand why he would say it for that sort of game. But I say like, I'm trying to think of a game on like, I'm just going to say Hogs of War because I can't think of anything else that has never come forward. Stuff. Or like say... imagine all the licensed game stuff, right? Like the James Bond stuff's never going to go forward. The some of the older other games, like The Thing, is never going to go forward. Like Predator: Concrete Jungle, that's never going to go forward, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, so you need so
what a game.
Whereas other stuff goes forward, and you can play it again. Some other stuff's being locked there forever. Like I can never play. Those like James Bond Bloodstone, which came out like last gen, like on the PS3, it's never going to go forward because
or Everything or Nothing or any of those like big classics. Yeah,
even like if you love them, like we might get GoldenEye because Phil Spencer just keeps like, what can I do today to make myself look amazing and destroy PlayStation? So like we might get that, but it's a big thing for certain games. There was this game when you played like as a tiger and sort of top down and you was like beating them up sort of thing. Like I can't remember the name
of it.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll find the name.
Typhoon.
Typhoon, yeah. Like, that's just dead to time, right?
How did you think of that? That's like the most deep cut pull. 1995.
I was thinking about it because I was going through like what these games, because I used to have a special like backpack for my PlayStation 1 when I had to go to my mum's boyfriend's house, but they would like go like away for a weekend. And like, I was like, well, you can't stay at home, Ben Murray. It's the PS1 years. You're still young. get over there and look like your adopted nan. Like, I was like, well, fine. Well, I'm just going to play Spyro and Typhoon the whole time.
I did Google it. It's called Typhoon Wrath of the Tiger. Which, brilliant. I mean, I remember that. When just animal mascots mixed with, oh, we're totally maturing as an industry, so let's just have a big fight.
That's never going to come forward, is it? So, you know.
Sadly not.
Yeah, so that's why I would love to find out how much it was. And like, if they just made two SKUs of a PS5, like if they just literally got a crowbar and you see Jim Ryan crowbarring PS2s into the PS5. There you go. It's an extra 50 quid. There you go. And I would buy it.
Well, that's the thing, right? We said like everyone's sort of talking about like what is the response to Game Pass? What is the response to, you know, access points to older console libraries? And I think for me, like, it's not until you bring up those games that really do feel like one-offs. Josh, you've been playing The Thing, but you had to get the PS2, you had to get the PS2 out or whatever it was, and the PS2 adapter to go back to it. But like, I'm assuming it feels worthwhile once you get going. Like, there is like a quality to that game, even though it is this weird, outdated one-off thing.
Yeah, definitely, because you know, we mentioned our podcast on Monday, Scott. You don't get games like Typhoon or The Thing or The Sopranos Road to Respect like just these days. You know, as Benoit likes to say, like the middle ground is just kind of like fallen out, and now we have indies and we have AAA blockbusters and we have nothing in between. But there was a lot of interesting stuff going on in that in-between space, even if it wasn't the most polished. Like The Thing, the game, is not the most polished thing in the entire world, but it has a lot of heart, has a lot of creativity, has a lot of things going for it that a lot of people just won't even like know about these days, because there's just no easy way to play it. Even if you do get a PlayStation 2 or you manage to track down one of those fat PS3s off eBay like Roy's done, like there's no guarantee that these games will work. There's no guarantee that they'll work as they're intended. Like I got this PlayStation 2, I finally got the adapter so it works on a modern TV, and I was excited to play a Star Wars Episode 1 Phantom Menace, but because that thing plays in like 240p and my TV literally doesn't recognize it, so that's another hoop I'd have to jump through if I wanted to play it in whatever form I can get it, you know. So there's so much value in going back to it. It just sucks that Sony in particular is making it as hard as possible to do so, because in reality, only a fraction of the audience will be doing that, but that doesn't mean there's no value in it, you know?
Do you think, like, as a wider question, because it's taken for granted that you will listen to older music, you'll listen to the classics, and you'll watch the classics of film or some recommendation of a film from 10 plus years ago. Like, do you think that if you, because that assumption is on the gaming side that only a fraction of the populace are going back to these old games, mainly because of the access point not being there. But do you think that's the case across the board? Are most people only bothered about the new stuff?
I think so. And I think it kind of, you know, makes sense, you know, for better and worse. I think in whatever culture we're in right now, you know, you look at film, and film is obviously has a much longer history than games. But you'll get people, you know, I know people, and it's not that they don't like movies, but they'll say, you know, I don't want to watch that. It's in black and white. I don't want to go back and watch a silent movie, you know. And, you know, our equivalent, I guess, is kind of like PlayStation 1 games or even older, where it is a bit rudimentary and they might just be off-put. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about how even going back to PlayStation 3 games, it doesn't feel like you have the same finesse and control over characters that you do now. And you kind of take those evolutionary steps for granted in terms of technology, and you assume that games as they're playing now, like that's how they played years ago. But I go and boot up the thing and it's completely unwieldy and I'm wrestling with the controller
and control schemes as well, like just massive changes. Like, do you want to shoot with the X button?
It's literally the X button, and that's a big task, but it's worth getting over. But to answer your question, I think for a lot of people, they're just like, well, I don't want to, you know, it's not appealing to me because I just want the new stuff. And I think that that's fine, but also it shouldn't invalidate the people who do want to go back and
I was gonna say with like films and stuff, like you can't access a library of all of the vast majority of films are either on something like Prime or YouTube or whatever, those access points are there, like for a fee you can have this one-off rental period, and I guess that's what they're trying to get towards with game streaming to maybe satisfy that. But Ben, what's your thoughts on, because you've like me and you have both taken the plunge recently, Josh got the adapter for his console, but you bought a PS3, I've dug out, well, I already always had a Vita, but I've bought a whole bunch of Vita games that I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna go away if I don't get them, so that kind of thing. But do you think the average populace's approach to legacy content is positive, or are most people not involved?
It's weird because a film is such a sort of like, you just sit there and you let it flow through you, right? You just sort of like, it's whereas like you will get some people that are like, oh, I can't be bothered to watch a black and white film, but then like if they're just sitting there, then they can probably be on their phone and half watch it like most people do now, sort of thing. Or with music, like I say, remember that song with the people that put their faces on the monkeys? I just wanted to hear that song, and I did, and I went onto YouTube and found it, and was like, "Where's your head at?" And I was like, "You know what? That was a fun time." I was going to
go Ting Tang, Walla Walla Bing Bang, but yeah, go on.
I was also thinking of that song as well, but I went with that music video used cartoons to scare me, and I had to leave the room when it came on the music channel. My mum liked that song. I was like, "I can't see these monkeys of humans' faces. I don't know why. It just ruined me." But then with like consoles, like, I was thinking of like, should I just get a PS2 and a PS1 or whatever? But then I was like, I'm a bit too lazy to buy all these adapters. So I went for the most laziest option ever, which was the fat PS3, which just upscales these games to make them sort of work. Mm-hmm. And they do sort of work. But then like, say, well, if you go back to the controls, like someone who's only ever played Fortnite, and then they build like a billion sort of story tower, and then they go and play like, say, Desert Storm. They're playing it. Why does the character go back to the middle when I finished? And why there's unlimited people coming out of this one room, which is only the size of a cupboard, and I turn around, they come back at me. Like things like that. Like games were just, sure, films were shot differently, like and films were made in a certain way. But ever since like a certain era, we've had film as we know as a language has been sort of like understandable and digestible to people, and you can just pay £2 to watch it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then music videos you can just find on YouTube, or you can just go on Spotify and that sort of thing. Whereas games, they're so much more active rather than sort of passive, if that's the way to like go through it.
That's just a whole other thing as well, is like the the assumed completion rate of like having access to these massive libraries of titles. Like, does completion rates put publishers off putting their titles on there? But you would still, I mean, for me, like if we're having a conversation and one of us brings up Soul Reaver or something, and I haven't played it in a long time, I'm going to want to go and dabble back in that game. And it's like, the only way I can do that is getting it on PSP or whatever, like the nearest thing. And most people wouldn't have that access point. So I just think that like you said, music, Spotify, movies, YouTube archives, whatever, like there's, gaming doesn't have that thing. And I think the Xbox is getting closer to it. Nintendo have certainly abandoned it by not doing the virtual console stuff anymore. And it's just a weird talking point where either we take it for granted that it's not going to become a thing because it's only for like weird hardcore maniacs like us, or you know, it is a massive problem and it should be brought up to, you know, all the time.
And put it this way, like, I reckon most diehard Hitman fans of that series have never played Hitman Agent 47 on the PC, right? Because like a lot of people that play it now probably weren't.
Well, I came in on 2. I don't know if you did as well.
Yeah, a lot of people came on 2 because that was a console game, right? And that was on PS2 and that was on Xbox. I don't think it was on GameCube, but like that first one was only on PC. And then I had to go back to that afterwards because it was still the era where like Return to Castle was starting, Outcast, you could get it running. I remember upgrading my PC to play Empire at War and buying a graphics card and thinking I was some sort of technical wizard because I screwed in all that thing. And after that, I just gave up because I was like, you know what? I can run spreadsheets somewhere else. I can't be all of this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, there's certain things that certain games are just ones like in a massive series are just lost out there, sort of thing. And like even with the 360, right, there was the original, I think it was the Hitman multi-pack, and you couldn't play Hitman 2. It was Hitman Blood Money, Hitman 2. You couldn't play Hitman 2 unless you switched your 360 back to the component ports because it wouldn't run through the HDMI. There was a weird thing like that. That was
that
just
little switch thing. Yeah.
You had to take it out and you had to do some weird, like even on the 360, you had to do some magic there.
Taifu and that switch are the deepest cuts we've ever made on this podcast. That's that's a real short of age thing. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I think, like, yeah, Josh, do you think the same thing, that it's just like, it is a box that should be ticked, like access to older games? Or is just going forward, you think it's going to be a war of attrition, like Sony will wait it out and stick by their no one's bothered type stuff? Or are Sony right now putting together some sort of all singing, all dancing backwards compatibility monthly PlayStation legacy service?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think when it comes to games, especially like Roy was talking about there, you know, the scale of the evolution of technology has been so rapid compared to other mediums that a game that you're used to now plays completely differently to a game even 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we get into this weird space where the industry is always pushing forward, but then it's always viewing its past as being outdated. We're seeing that with like the Last of Us remake. At what point does the Last of Us 2013 become outdated in the minds of gamers and publishers? Apparently that's right now, because we need a remake to implement new features.
I don't know.
Well, I don't agree, but I think that's obviously what the industry is pushing for, you know. And to me, that's a fool's game, because at what point does something become outdated? Is it 6 months after it came out? Is it a year after it came out? Is it 5 years? I think if you get into that mindset, the industry will just eat itself, and it will be trying to continually replenish like these games or update these games so that they're new or modern, when you don't have to it doesn't have to be like that. You know, you should appreciate the legacy where you've come from and make that legacy accessible so people now can appreciate it more, rather than having to view walkthroughs on YouTube or whatever. They can go back, and even if they only play 5 minutes, an hour, 2 hours or something, they at least get to experience it, and they at least have the option. What I hate is the fact that now we're getting into this period where we just don't have the option, where you're just not even allowed, or if you want it, you have to have the resources to do so. You have to have the ability to track these things down, plug it in, find all the adapters and stuff. And it's just, when it comes, it reminds me of the whole internet thing, right? You know, when we were moving to digital only future in 2013 with Xbox or whatever, and then you had executives being like, look, if your internet's not up to snuff, that's not our problem, we're just going to leave you behind. And that was only, you know, perhaps a fraction of the audience who had that issue, but it's still an issue people had. And I just think it's a little bit ignorant and a little bit arrogant to just ignore a bunch of people, and in this case, your history and legacy, to prioritize the new and the now.
Well, the thing that stands out to me, which I think hardly ever gets talked about, is how even the game, like, whenever we make analogs to other, or comparisons to other mediums, we make them through like an artistic lens. Like, we're comparing like the worthwhile, like how worthwhile is like re-experiencing this thing in regards to, like, you know, comparing it to music and film. Whereas I think that there's a massive strand of the gaming industry that needs to be directly, or is directly comparable to the tech industry. Because if you start thinking in like, in terms of, well, I wouldn't go back to a phone from 10 years ago, or I wouldn't go back to, you know, like the way that this potential phone ran this app 10 years ago, this feature that I've now gotten used to, then it starts to make more sense in regards to how potentially a bunch of executives view that stuff and go like, well, clearly it's outdated because clearly this texture is outdated or whatever. Whereas if it was the artistic quality of it, or the, you know, the thematic quality, like The Last of Us for me hasn't aged a day, but it has if you put it up against how far texture work has come in Last of Us 2. So it's like there's different ways to, I guess, approach or to talk about how something ages in different mediums. And the tech side of it mostly gets like sideswiped for gaming, but I think that might be one of the biggest reasons why that stuff keeps coming back.
I mean, this isn't a one-for-one comparison, but look how up in arms movie fans got when George Lucas made it so that the only versions of Star Wars you could get of the original trilogy were the special editions or the updated editions that he'd gone back to and tinkered to in order to replace what came before. And if you want to get an original version of Star Wars, you have to track down a VHS, you have to track down one of the older DVDs, then you have to buy a VHS player, buy an old CRT television to play it as it was intended, right? And that's just one series, and people lost their minds over that stuff, rightly so, because the choice then is taken away from them, in the same way that I think the choice is being taken away from players when it comes to Sony's stuff, especially.
That's a really good comparison, to be fair, like, because if you want to play the original Spyro, Crash Bandicoot, Crash Team Racing, Medieval, whatever, you can't unless you buy those original consoles. Like, they're available right now on PSP and PS Vita, and I guess the PS3 actually, but those storefronts are going to be going offline soon. But the remade versions that are like have a bigger price point or whatever are going to continue being available for now. That's actually a really good one-to-one comparison. Mr. Benroy, do you have any closing thoughts as a new PS3 owner? Or a re-owner?
I went onto the PS store and I was going so slow. I was just like, I don't want to buy these FIFA things. I just went off it and just couldn't be bothered. And I'm buying stuff physically. and I'm becoming a nut. Who knows, maybe in like 10 years about whether I do this and I've said it all again. But for now, there are just certain things like, I mean, at this point, we've given Ubisoft, Eves, and whoever else all this time. Like, they could just put these Splinter Cell HD collections that they put on disc or put, I don't know if it's on the PS3 store, but that stuff could just go right now onto like the PS4 or the PS5. But then they want to hold on to it and also like make it more valuable. And by the time it comes out again,
it might sell you a one later down the line.
Yeah, it's sort of things like, I think there's not to a less cynical thing. That's the reason why sort of like Remedy aren't talking about Alan Wake, and they won't talk about Alan Wake ever going to any PlayStation console, really. And until the point when it does, about everyone buys it because people that may have never had an Xbox can now play Alan Wake for the first time, which all ties into Control and Alan Wake 2 in development in it. So like, they're going to have to put it out at some point, and do they put it out together? Or and even that, certain companies that we seem to like that are more loved than others, that they're holding stuff back, and like, what's going on here and what's going on there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It seems just businesslike and weird to shut down the PlayStation Store unless you can say like, oh yeah, it was costing too many coins, but I imagine it wasn't costing that much.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, are all those publishers, all those like archives of titles being sat on because they could sell you a remaster somewhere down the line, which is what they started to do across the 8th generation, where even the likes of like Prototype 1 and 2 were coming back as like the remaster, but it was just a port. Like they fixed the frame rate, but it was nigh on the same game.
At least they're doing it though. Like those things go down in price fast, but then you got other ones that just sit there forever and just sort of like, what's going on?
That's the thing. But yeah, that's what I mean. Like to them, they were satisfying the need because, oh, you can buy this game again. But it was £30. Like the Ultimate Alliance remasters that came back, like they were ludicrously priced. And then they were delisted again. And it's just kind of, you know, if you're a fan of the medium, you want access to legacy generations of content or generations of games. And I think if they get in the way at all, that stuff is just always going to be a negative.
Right. Okay. Without getting like too Disco Elysium in my choices of how I'm going to respond to this, I just feel like, you know, what you said there about whether it's costing too much money or whether it's not, you know, part of me is like, it shouldn't matter. You know, this is like history. This is your history. This is your legacy. And it even if you're not making loads of money on it, even if it's costing you a little bit of money, like surely it's worth it to kind of like future-proof your libraries, future-proof everything that you've made in the hours and amount of resources you've put into building all of these titles, all of this art. Mm-hmm. Like surely it's worthy investing in that so it's there for the future. You know, obviously, you know, this is the reality we're living in where things need to make money and they need to make all of the money in the world, as we've heard so many times on the Jimquisition. But at the same time, like surely you can have like a division pushing to maintain this accessibility, pushing to maintain these servers, these games, so that they're accessible and can be appreciated by like future generations. But yeah, I guess like exactly what you were saying, that does go entirely against the cynical view of, well, we could just not do that and sell them for 60 quid when we remake them in a couple of years. Yeah.
And you would think that, you know, there's a way for all this stuff to exist in a symbiotic circle in regards to, you go back to, I'm ex-consumer. I'm curious what the first-person shooters were. And I dive into Wolfenstein, I dive into Doom. And then that reminds me, that's cool. I'm going to go buy Doom Eternal or whatever. And like that would go across genres, across different franchises. Like that should all work in one big maelstrom of here's why the medium matters and not be this tech focused, only the newest, flashiest, fastest thing matters. And you would just hope, I mean, that's obviously what Xbox are directly trying to address with Game Pass, and like here's old games touched up automatically, but still they are those original games. But yeah, I guess we'll wait and see how those things pan out. But right now it's a big old conversation of the importance of old school libraries, and the fact that the likes of me and Mr. Benroy have resorted to just buying old consoles and old games rather than playing the newer ones. Speaking of new stuff though, we also dove into a little bit of Outriders, which, Benroy, you might as well take this because you've played it with a squad, I think, whereas I've done the solo campaign stuff like a madman.
I couldn't imagine playing that alone in a certain way without some sort of podcast on or anything. But
yeah, it's a podcast game. I'm not sitting listening to the dialogue, quote unquote dialogue.
I'm a pyromancer. I think my friend's a trickster and someone else is another person with an ability. And I've gone through the intro again for the...
Why did you do that again? I just picked up my beta save thing.
Well, because I went to the other console, didn't I? So I've now... that's the seventh time I've done it because I played it like so many times in Poland.
No!
And it was like literally the last time I'm playing this intro ever again. And I never want to see it ever after this. Skipping all the dialogue and just through this. Mm-hmm. But playing the actual game with friends... they introduced the world tier system, which is a weird way of like you get more like the better loot if you're on a higher world tier. But the jumps from tiers are like, well, you could be on world tier 2 and it's easy, and then you go to world tier 3 and you're gonna get smashed and you're gonna get hurt and you're gonna go home crying. So we're playing.
But not always the thing in these kind of loot games though, where all of a sudden, you know, bullets just kill you in one go because that's like what difficulty is.
It feels like three levels above though, and I'm like, fine, whatever, we're playing world tier 2, going through it, and then when you're playing on a world tier that's more equated to you, maybe I'm just crap, tell me in the comments below, whatever. it's just one of those fun shooter games. But what I will say, two of us are playing on Xbox Series Spencer's S's. Yes. And then one of my friends, Xbox Die Hard Till He Dies, is playing on the Series X. Uh-huh. He's got very good internet, better than me, better than my friend. He was getting booted out every 10, 20 minutes, and it was constant, and it kept happening. And after a few hours, it was just like, let's just give up and go and play PUBG, and we did. Because that game is still coming in hot, even after that first weekend when people couldn't get in. And then you could see people on Twitter going, oh, we're almost in. It's weird. Like, I mean, it's on Game Pass. Game Pass isn't free, but it is free if you've already got Game Pass.
That's a good quote. They should lead with that.
Yeah. But like, if you're going to buy this full price, 70, if it's 70.
It's not worth the full price.
I hate to say this about things, but it's very middle of the road, very B game, very milquetoast, very you don't want to listen to the dialogue, very play it with your friends or don't play it at all. I'm sorry, it's a Game Pass thing or not at all. You should probably play Oddworld or something like that instead.
I will say that because I like going through it solo, I was actually quite surprised by how well it works as a solo third person shooter. The actual mechanics are totally solid. You know, it's people can fly. It's the dudes that did Gears of War Judgment. And I feel like they were just like, let's just do a Gears style game. And there's a lot of Gears DNA in there, like in terms of the stop and pop stuff and the general tone and everything.
I will say I was being balanced there, but like I really think that the early powers at least work well to this. Like if it was just a cover-based shooter, I'd be like, I just can't.
Would just be the Division on a different planet if it was that, yeah.
But I like the thing that people point out, isn't it? The coverage for the enemies, and which it is, because I like being a pyromancer. I like being shoving my fire into the floor and making someone rise from the sky, or varied of fire powers. Someone puts like a meat turret down, my friend shoots meet at people, and other things when you can another ability launches in the sky and comes down. Like the powers are fun, they mix it up, and that really is what saves it for me. But they need to sort the servers out, and I mean I don't know where it's just like in GoldenEye where you pull in someone like Boris is pulling them out, or Boris is shoving some more servers in. But we need to get these, like, these online games are always
what
online.
A reference. That's, you're only going to get that if you've watched GoldenEye very recently. That's that's very, very specific to that movie.
I'm always perpetually watching GoldenEye, okay? And these online games, come on. I get you might not have thought it would have been that big, but it was on Game Pass. And Game
it's
Pass.
Always that thing, isn't it? It's like, how could you guys not know? And I know that they put the tweet out, just saying that they're doing whatever they can. They're trying to sort of manage server load. But like you said, it's on Game Pass. That's 20 million people a month and growing. Even if a fraction of that get involved, you're going to have a big day one load. The thing I was going to say, in regards to the powers and stuff, the second I realized if you set someone on fire and then do, there's like a lifting sort of telekinetic blast thing, playing as the Pyromancer, they'll just hang in midair, scream, and then blow up. And I was just like, yep, that's, I forgot when games did ridiculous Mortal Kombat Unreal Tournament style deaths like this. Pure PsyOps, the Mindgate conspiracy for me. And I was like, this is actually all right. I do think that those combat mechanics are obviously solid. It's obviously built for squad play, even though part of the marketing is, as it always is, you can totally play this as a single player game. I think it works surprisingly well as a single player, given that there are lengthy cutscenes. There are actual characters here, even if they're quite boring and bland and one dimensional. At least they get like quite a lot of screen time. They believe in their story and their world. Even though there's not that much to it, there's a lot of time spent trying to flesh out what's there. But yeah, it's weird. If you just want a serviceable third person cover shooter with special powers, it ticks that box, but that's kind of all it does.
I will say, like, I've tried to save Mr. Chang like every time now, and then when I realized Mr. Chang just respawns after getting murdered into a cutscene, and you can just keep doing that same side quest over and over again, like, I forget who do I care about and who do I not. Like, it's just the problem with these disposable online games where I wish it was like, this is the meat, this is the potatoes, and then this is just, I don't know,
we need to do a whole like separate pod on, like, because I have a running theory that Game Pass and monthly service subscription stuff makes games more disposable, and I feel like I would be so interested in completion rates after the rise of Game Pass, because I would imagine they've fallen off the cliff.
Sorry to jump in again, but you can tell that I have achievements on Xbox because you get that super loud, you're a god noise when you get certain achievements. And you're like, I've just done the first level in ODST. You're amazing. You can just see how many people haven't touched that at all. Yeah. And sort of, you know what I mean?
Like, well, like, yeah, I combined like a couple of powers and it was 5% of the player base had done that. And I was like, have you guys even shot some guns? Like,
You've done the tutorial. Whoa.
But yeah, I mean, Josh, to bring this back around to you, because you've been hovering around outright for a little bit, are you still planning on getting in, or has the boom popularity period passed a little bit?
I'm gonna get it.
You're gonna end up paying for it so you can play with the hashtag lads, and it's gonna be 70 bones.
I've got a sickness, and the sickness is
you do.
Paying for games I know will be only all right. Like, I totally, you know, fully buy everything you're saying, and I don't expect anything more than what you've just described. But I can still have a lot of fun with that. And there are three things stopping me right now. One, I have literally no space on my PlayStation 5 to install it. Two, I don't want to buy in at this price point when it's still having a bunch of problems on the server side. Mm. And three, it's just like the money thing. I need to make sure it's worth the price, or maybe see if it's going to come down in price, especially because it is free on Game Pass or whatever. But I can appreciate like a sort of Division style, just mindless podcast game. Like, I'm here for that if the combat is strong enough. I played the Division 1 solo and had a good time. I played the Division 2 solo and had a less good time, but still enjoyed it mostly. And this kind of feels like it's going to tick that box. So at the end of the month, when I finished Disco Elysium, when I finished Oddworld, and probably once Call of Duty drops another update, then I'll hopefully get around to getting Outriders, unless Resident Evil is out, unless it's May time and we've got other games to play.
One thing to throw
I'm
in.
Hoping to fade in.
That always kills squad-based games if you play them solo. Because it did do this in the Division 1, maybe not in 2, but you would still go down waiting for people to revive you Division, which thankfully the Outriders doesn't do. I think it just checkpoints you, or you can get back up again. I forget. I'm blanking on what actually happens when you die in that game. I've barely died in it, to be honest. But in terms of, like, you know, that being a thing, I remember dying and that not being a thing. That was always the thing that made me run for the hills from the Division.
side tangent before we just quickly get to Oddworld. I don't know if I said this before, but I did the total opposite to you two of Division, where we found a way to combine our two squads of fours to give us. We were running around in a squad of eight and we ruined the Dark Zone and we became kings. But that was a fun time.
The Division's Dark Zone is by far the coolest game mechanic thing that Ubisoft have ever come up with. And it was scary anywhere. It should be everywhere.
And once you became the kings of the Dark Zone, it was great. You're just killing people as they come out the spawn building. Like, you're not going anywhere. Sorry, give me a loot.
You're the big bullies on the playground that all the little kids are scared of. Me and Josh are the little solo little kids just trying to get by, trying to sneak
around.
You've
torn the fence down so your mates from the other school, the big hard school, can come in and help you out. And it's not fair. I don't like it.
It was like the early days of, I was really scared doing this in PUBG as well, because you can get banned forever. Or you could do, but like, if you joined at the same time, then you could have another squad of eight, because you just join and you'd be all there. You'd find each other in the lobby and you'll dance around and then you just kill more people. Yeah, there's another time. I'm not saying anything else because I'm scared of being, don't ban me.
Yeah, just definitely admit it on a popular...
it was an Xbox. You can ban my Xbox account and it on PlayStation, sorry.
In a segue, speaking of things that aren't very fair, Oddworld Soulstorm's reviews aren't very fair because they're very negative and the game's brilliant. I'm loving this thing. The new Abe's Odyssey game, to sort of refer to it by the wider franchise, very much a remake of Abe's Exodus, where if you go back into the history of the franchise, which I hadn't done until very recently, Lorne Lanning, the creative director, you know, made Abe's Odyssey, massive smash hit, and then the publishers at the time, who I forget who they were off the top of my head, said, we need a sequel within 9 months, and he had to scrap everything he was going to do for the actual sequel and just churn out this level pack that became Abe's Exodus, and then just for whatever different machinations in the business, they were only able to put together Muncher's Odyssey and then Stranger's Wrath, and it's only been now that he's finally done the sequel to Abe's Odyssey. So Soulstorm, it feels like the actual mechanical evolution of what that very first game was, and for me, I'm loving that thing. But a lot of the reviews, the general sort of perception is, oh, it feels outdated, it feels very old, it doesn't feel like they've done enough to bring it up to modern standards. But for me, it's perfect because it's exactly where I left off. Like, it feels like it's kind of taken from the 90s. You do have a double jump, things are sped up, you do have access to this 360 aiming wheel and this little sort of crafting system where you can, you know, throw like a bottle of inflammable liquid and then throw like a flare after it and burn a bunch of the enemies and stuff like that, as like an extension to the game mechanics. But for me, it being this PS1 throwback is perfect. Like, Benroy, I don't know if you're feeling the same vibes, but me and you both sort of grew up on these games.
I am loving it. Like, I feel like a lot of the, because no one got review codes for this game, so I feel like a lot of the reviews are people trying to play as fast as they can, do as much as they can, and I feel like that's probably tainting a lot of these reviews, whereas I've been playing this where I've been doing one or two levels every other day and sort of taking it bit by bit and sort of like really sort of sinking in and just taking my time with each one, and I've been enjoying it like that. The very first level, the tutorial thing where you started running away and then it was like slowing you down.
Weird intro. Yeah.
That was very sort of like, oh, come on, I don't care now. Can we just do it as I'm going along? That brought me down a bit. And then I was a bit concerned, like, is this whole game going to be throwing jars of water at things? But now, like, getting into, like, say, the first factory area on the train sort of thing and all the sort of sections, and just really getting back into the Oddworld puzzles of, like, well, now I can get in lockers, and now it's sort of like there's more focus of having more MacGuffins with you than just like one or two. But you can't fart, so I don't know if that's bad, because so far I can't just go.
Tell you what though, that whole fart thing, like delving into the Lorne Lanning stuff, if you go and watch the interview on Ars Technica, he did a whole thing about how he initially great intended interview. This really, really great interview, really intended this whole five-part series that would be this incredibly and very serious, well-researched like metaphor for, you know, people surviving in America, the class system and everything else. And then when they were all high off their faces during development, put a little fart button in there. And the developers just laughed quite a lot, and they ended up leaving it in. And it's not that he's like hating the fart or anything, but he's very much aware that that is not like that became synonymous with that character. Whereas there's a lot more going on in the Abe fiction, in the Abe's Odyssey fiction.
It's amazing to see how it jumps at this class structure and corporate society and all that sort of thing, and all the undertones that totally flew over your head when you're like,
oh, totally. Hey, he was just the fart alien when you were.
You can fart and you can say hello and you can take over the gun people and shoot other things. And
That's something that's worth pointing out as well, is that the possession stuff is brilliant. Like, it always has been, but they've freed it up a bit now, where you know, you hold both the shoulder buttons, or you hold L2, and you can, you know, like, sort of meditate on the spot and guide this energy around and possess different enemies, which they give you, especially towards the beginning, they give you more, like, a whole bunch of different enemy encounters where you're taking possession of, like, a flying slig with a chain gun, and then it becomes, like, a twin stick shooter for a little bit while you take out some of the other enemies. And stuff like that, I think, is a nice little sort of, it gives it variety. You're not always just doing, like, basic throw the bottle style puzzle stuff, but overall cutscenes are brilliant too. I just, for me, it's just like, it's overall, it is this great throwback. There is awkwardness in it, especially in terms of some of the boss battles. There's a boss battle on the train about midway through that is insanely awkward, but I just, there's something about the heart of it that just feels like a deliberate throwback to where they left off. And if you were Lorne Lanning after this long, that's entirely what you would do. Like, you wouldn't scrap the thing that you had in motion back then. And for me, there's endless charm in that. And so I'm like treasuring it, but I get the negatives for it as well.
Yeah. And the checkpointing seems very sort of like, not rudimentary, but like of a time.
Yeah.
And I can see why some people, like, I've got annoyed from it at some point. Like,
you do go right back. Like, if you've not run back to re-trigger it, everything goes back again.
I also had like a checkpoint that broke on me where I triggered this dog thing in a cave and I left and came back and it was still right there. So I had to I've quickly got to run in there and jump over and get to this thing and get back so I can just lure it away so I can finish that part of the cave. But yeah, it's a sequel to that game, but it's a sequel to New and Tasty as well, where I felt like New and Tasty was such a, just so nice to play that game again. And like, again, like, if we go back to the loop it back around and end on game preservation, should we be able to play the first version of Abel in New and Tasty? Like, I don't know. Like,
well, just do both. I have the originals on PSP or PS Vita, at Abe's Odyssey anyway. And it's great seeing the contrast. And I think for me, that specific question, it should be just everything. But Josh, are you planning on picking up the old farting Mudderkin Abe's Odyssey Minor Man?
Absolutely. Like I said, if it wasn't for the space issue and the fact that I pretty much just sleptwalked
just through,
like,
the
past week, like, it just, no, I can't, Scott. The new map might be coming. I've got a sickness. It's tied to me like the symbiote suit in Spider-Man. I can't get rid of it. It needs to be there forever.
That game can do one, because when I went to play the campaign, put the disc in, install it. I think I said this before. It installed everything but the campaign. I was like, no, I want the campaign.
Mr. Activision wants you to get Warzone and to spend your money on the microtransactions, Ben Roy. They don't care about the campaign, just like Sony doesn't care about PlayStation 1 games. But, you know, in anticipation of getting round to Soulstorm, I might boot up the old PlayStation 1 classic and play Abe's Odyssey on there, Abe's Exodus on there. The first one.
I believe. I don't even remember if that's on there or not. It'll be the version of that game, Josh Brown, but at least
maybe
something. You know,
maybe
L1
maybe.
Circle, give it a fart, do whatever you do. But yes, for now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Sony fixed my controller. They're good for that, at least. Goodbye.
Yay. And Josh Brown.
Bye. Sony didn't fix my controller because I didn't want to phone them up because I'm too scared of them. I'm really scared of them. Please don't do it for me.
Maybe someday, but not now. Oof. Bye, though.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.